Now, for something completely different, here is your host, Brian Wilson.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and people of all sexes, welcome to the Haley to the Chief episode of The Two and Only, our headfirst plunge into the ankle-deep waters of truth and integrity, evaporating quickly inside the deep swamp of the logic-free zone. According to a classified memo from Freedom's friends at the NSA, this week's hosts will once again expose yours cruelly, Brian Wilson, former radio and TV talk show sensation, undervalued Substack writer, and author of three tepid-selling books, and recipient of 2023's Most Sought-After Guest Award from the Dundalk Sheriff's Office and BS&D fraternity. And joining us once again is international Speedo sensation, best-selling author of Last Rights, The Death of American Liberty, a verbal catapult for the New York Post opinion page, whose beard was recently honored for the retail resurrection of the infamous Fuller Brush Company. Please welcome the inspirational James Bovard.
Fuller Brush Company, you know, that's a new one. You know, you always surprise me, and I appreciate that. Nowadays, with the way the nation and politics is going, we need all the comic relief we can get.
Yeah, I try to be as relieved of what I have as possible. I was thinking about, I don't know why it makes, you know, it's just the nice thing about creativity. You know, it's often wondered what dark, dank portion of the brain is responsible for spitting out these things spontaneously. And I have no reason to have been contemplating the past efforts of the Fuller Brush Company. But I do recall one time as a child, one of those guys actually came to the door because they did go door to door. And I think mom bought a broom and dad bought a shoeshine brush or something like that.
A shoeshine brush. Okay. Well, you know, I think I had one of those up in my attic.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure that's where that one went short after that. But dad was pretty spiffy. I mean, he was an engineer, sales engineer, and he had to put on good shine on those wingtips when he plowed the furrows of various companies and so on that were his clients. But
I was waiting to see where you went with plowing the furrows, but it was wholesome.
Yeah, well, I had to, because I had to remember the context. I'm talking about my dad. I mean, you know, if it was somebody else, you know, me, you, one of the beer drinking friends, a number of ways we could have gone with that one. But I noticed in getting ready for today's exciting conversation, it looks as if last week's glowing forecast for the future of the Nikki Haley campaign didn't turn out so well in the land of Donnie and Marie.
Well, it's so sad because she was she claimed she had so much momentum, and then she got her butt whipped by none of the above in Nevada.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the great things about the state of Nevada. It offers on ballots, people can vote for none of the above. And that's none of the above came in first place. Haley, I think, maybe had 33%. So, I mean, if you get your butt whipped by none of the above, and in Nevada, of all places, I was counting on the Mormon vote to put her over the top. But, you know, I was wrong.
Yeah, I didn't get a copy of the ballot. I wanted to see if Vermin Supreme was on there.
He was in New Hampshire for sure.
That's that. And you got a gig up there later on this year, don't you?
It's listed. Yeah, the Pork Fest up in June.
June, right? Were you there last year?
I wasn't there. I was at the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance in July. Good folks, open bar.
Well, which explains the first comment. Was he there? Was Vermin? Have you met this guy?
I don't think he was there for the New Hampshire Liberty Alliance.
So you haven't had the pleasure, I guess. Of,
I don't recall. I might have met him at something many years ago, but you know, he's someone who does a good job of getting people to laugh at politicians. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, there is that. If you've never heard of Vermin Supreme, just Google him. I'm sure he's got a number of pages and exposures and so on, and a real eye-catching outfit that he seems to wear majority of the time. For the many agnostics and atheists listening, you'll be interested to know Mr. Bovard has provided you with unassailable proof that God does not exist. If you just skim his February 1st New York Post piece, Biden Speaks of Hell at National Prayer Breakfast, you'll learn that Biden did not turned into a pillar of salt, alleged to have been the fate of the disobedient Mrs. Lot, who became the world's biggest salt shaker during the Sodom and Gomorrah barbecue a few thousand years ago. For sins far more egregious, Joe Biden remains somewhat animated, but not iodized. Maybe you could comment further on that, Jim. I missed the prayers this year.
Well, that was a great riff you had on Sodom and Gomorrah. I'd just love to know how many listeners get it. I was sitting there thinking, I felt like I was back in Presbyterian Sunday school.
Ooh.
So Biden spoke last, Thursday morning at the National Prayer Breakfast. This, National Prayer Breakfast is one of the most hypocritical rituals in D.C. You have all these politicians who gather to silently pray that the Lord will smite their enemies or at least get them indicted on multiple charges. And so, the funny thing about this is that it's turned into a big scandal place because there was a lot of foreign spies there. There was a Russian spy that got busted a few years ago, a nice red-haired lady. Sorry to see her go to jail. I mean, there were a lot of questions about her guilt, but that's a different story. But anyhow, it was interesting to see Biden up there talking to the audience. So there was a riff he did at the prayer breakfast. The entire world looks to us. That's not hyperbole. This is an idea. This idea was made real before the soul became flesh, before the dream became a fact. It was prayed for. It was hoped for. It was believed in. That's the story of America. And so, you know, Lord have mercy on anybody trying to follow Biden's narrative. Because it's just like, okay, what the heck is he talking about? But to his credit, Biden did not mention meeting any long-dead foreign leaders at the prayer breakfast, as he did last night and at a fundraiser and a couple times last week. So,
yeah, not too many people in the Bible were French that I recall.
That's the problem with the Bible, you know? If it had more French influence, it would have had more humor and maybe some more... what is a euphemism here? Zestiness. Let's just say
zestiness would be good. Well, yeah. Certainly would have treated Adam and Eve a lot different.
True, but so since you mentioned the French, I've got a rope in my line here that the patron saint of the prayer breakfast was Tartuffe. And I heard from a number of readers, I don't know this guy, which party was he with? I'm thinking, no. He was the most famous character by the French playwright Molière, who should have taught Shakespeare how to write comedies, except Molière came afterwards.
Maybe I need to go back and revise my Sodom and Gomorrah line.
I don't know. But I've got to be careful because I might have already triggered the Shakespeare backlash by dissing him compared to Molière. But
a strong faction in our audience, I know. But I think this argues pretty strongly for a continued effort for separation of church and state. I can't imagine why the president of the United States would get up there and mumble various whatever it was and still
it's a very good idea to have a separation of religion and state, any religion, because you have all this. It's just kind of smarmy because you get all these folks claiming to be pious and oh, God loves us. And there was some guy from Italy who was singing, and it sounded to me like it reminded me of the audio tapes that the FBI played at Waco of rabbits being slaughtered. Mm. But folks at the prayer breakfast loved him, and they had tears. House Speaker Mike Johnson said that people wept in the front row as they listened to this Italian dude screeching at 8 a.m. in the morning. And it's like, oh my Lord, you know, this is early in the day to torture your eardrums.
It may not necessarily have been a cause and effect for the people in the front row, but who knows? I've always found it interesting in situations like this when, as you mentioned, part of the reason for the get-together is for people to all get together and pray that God will smite their enemies and all the rest of that. And I wonder if they've ever given thought to the fact that there's a similar meeting going on the other side. you know, for they're praying to their God to do the same thing to them. And it's there was a, as a matter of fact, there was a folk song out back in the mid 60s when I was playing that stuff on the radio down in Baton Rouge for the LSU student body. It was by the Chad Mitchell Trio.
And, yes.
And it was called With God on Our Side was the title. I think Shel Silverstein wrote it, but I could be dead wrong on that. But it proved, it sung the hypocrisy of everybody praying, you know, that and or saying that God's on our side. That's where we're going to win. We're going to beat the Germans. We're going to beat the Japs. We're going to beat the Indians. We're going to beat, you know, whatever, because God's on our side. Completely overlooking the fact there were an awful lot of Lutherans in Germany.
You know? Yeah, that's true.
And I've just found that to be rather remarkable that the clarifying thought behind the concept has never dawned on everyone. Everyone still thinks that God is on their side. And is another thing that I find that nothing kills a good conversation quicker, especially you see this on Facebook and Zero Hedge and Twitter, that as soon as someone brings up a faith-based solution or explanation for a given current problem, that's it. Conversation's over. You know, there's no way you can substantively carry forward anything about that subject without A, agreeing with the guy who brought the Bible, or getting off on a tangent on why his biblical references are not relevant.
So I need some clarification here as far as this. So I'm just checking whether me counting on my Smith & Wesson counts as a faith-based solution.
Yes. Well, yes, actually, because in some of the apocryphal books of the Bible that didn't make the King James edit, both Smith and Wesson are mentioned very highly.
That was quick. That was very good.
But the how many people have got, you know, a few dozen of those apocryphal chapters or books lying around somewhere? It's very hard to find. Even the Dead Sea Scrolls, you can't just run out and get a copy of those. So it's
It's very difficult to find the 357 Bible book.
True, true, that's true, and or any of the other popular calibers. So it's, but that's the way it is, and we'll just have to deal with it on that basis. I was leading up to our get together here. I was semi monitoring the Supreme Robes in the process of hearing the Colorado case to take Donald Trump's name off the ballot this November. And aside from Justice Sotomayor sounding like Elmer Fudd in a public speaking class, Jonathan Turley's running posts on Zero Hedge suggest that all is not going well. Now that it's over, by the way, that whole thing is over, and apparently did not turn out well, at least for people of the legal bent who were listening, for the disqualifiers and the Never Trumpers side. And I was just wondering, as a longtime observer of all sorts of government shenanigans, if you had any thoughts on how this might turn out, even though I've given you a kind of an inside peek behind the robe of the way the SCOTUS thing was going.
Yeah, the headlines from the news alerts for both the Washington Post and the New York Times indicated that the effort to ban Trump from the ballot has failed, at least at the Supreme Court on this case. So, you know, the Colorado versus Trump, I don't know if that's the name of the case, but it sounded like it crashed and burned. And, you know, that's appropriate. I'm not a Trump supporter, but all these folks coming up with these pretexts to ban him from the ballot and, you know, folks in the Washington Post claiming that it's important to save democracy by blocking the most popular candidate from letting people vote for him, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, there are a lot of good reasons for voters to be unhappy with both Trump and Biden, but it's a very dangerous precedent to create this new veto power of a simple allegation. Well, you know, this person is an enemy of democracy. He's banned. You know, many of the incumbents in Congress have proposed bills or endorsed bills that so blatantly trampled the Constitution that those folks should be maybe not banished, but they should have to run with an asterisk by their name. But that's not going to happen either, partly because there aren't that many people who give a damn about the Constitution anymore.
Well, true that. Well, I appreciated Jonathan Turley's comment. He said a lot of people and the Never Trumpers and the disqualifiers thought they'd be getting a cool reception from the Supreme Court. He said that the reception that they did get was absolutely glacial. That was a good line. Good line. And I say, so it's always fun perusing jimbovard.com. It's like Forrest Gump's box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. For example, just the other day, Jim posted a memory of how he put a DuPont Circle coffee shop and adult toy emporium out of business after just one visit. And if you missed that, I thought maybe you could share a little bit of that with us. I know we've mentioned DuPont Circle a few times in fairly pejorative terms, at least from when I was there. But as I think you brought out at the time, it's obviously been a few years since I made that circle. And
how exactly did you make the circle?
It's a DuPont circle. It's very simple. It's like having a foot race in a cul-de-sac. What the hell, you know? But
foot race in a cul-de-sac. I won't add. No, I'll shut up before I get in bad taste here. So, thanks for the reference to that. Yeah. So 2 years ago, I went down. I was meeting a friend of the Libertarian Institute, Hunter Derensis, and I didn't. It was rare for me to go into D.C. at that point because Washington D.C. had a vaccine mandate. And people had to show their vaccine cards if they were going into restaurants or practically any place else. It was a total sham. And it was a lot more popular with the affluent white folks in Northwest D.C. than with the working class blacks in Northeast and Southeast D.C. The survey showed that there was, there were, I guess, about three times as many blacks who did not support the vax passport regime as among whites. So there was a coffee shop that I visited. How do I put this gracefully? I was doing a drive-by visit. I didn't buy any coffee, but there was a
and they didn't serve beer, right?
no beer. So, but I was a long subway ride, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
There was a big sign on each of their coffee tables, and it said masks on and vaccine cards out. And it stated that all cafes and restaurants, including Phil's Coffee, are required by the mayor's office to check vaccine cards of dine-in customers. Thank you for helping us comply with local regulations. So the headline that I put on that was "Come Sip with the Gestapo." So, I mean, okay, I'm someone who I've never paid $6 for a coffee, old fashioned that way, but
admirable.
Cheap. But the folks, I was just puzzled that folks would be going there, spending $6-7 for a fancy cup of coffee, and then sit there and have their masks on, I guess, except when they're sipping, or maybe they were supposed to tilt their head to the side and pour it in. But there was an attitude. It was so incredibly servile. There was a comment, a former FDA press chief said, "The whole purpose of the vaccine passport is for the scared vaccinated to have a false sense of security." And this is what it was. It was like a pacifier. It was a pandemic security theater. But to see all these folks willing to submit to this, masks on and vaccine cards out, you can take that where the sun doesn't shine.
Yeah. Well, just the irony of the idea you're going into a coffee shop to have coffee and you have to have a mask on. I mean, it seems to be
paradoxical.
A bit, yeah. And I was just, but I was wondering, with a little creativity, you could have turned a coffee filter into a mask, and then
okay,
kind of.
Yeah,
it
I mean,
way.
There was if you had a coffee filter and some duct tape. If you're a good redneck, good rednecks always have duct tape. Yeah. So you just get that coffee filter and you just tape on. It probably doesn't work so well with a beard.
Well, you would have some difficulty, not so much putting it on, but getting it off, I guess, would be a real experience you wouldn't forget anytime soon. But
I have many difficulties. Yes, you're right. Yeah.
But I was, I'm curious, because when I read the article and I saw the bit about, the upper class whites, that can afford inside the Beltway living.
Master's degrees. You got to have a master's degree and a vax card.
True. and blacks at the lower end of the income spectrum. But today, we're against it. But today, whenever I do get out and about, you know, where the public lingers and shops and so on, there are people I see today wearing masks are all blacks. I don't see white people wearing masks. But you go to Kroger or to Publix or Wegmans or, you know, the Buy the Wee Motel or whatever, and everybody's wearing a mask is black. And I've never understood that other than the common story that was going around that the whole COVID germ, that whole thing, was invented to eliminate blacks.
Okay, that's not something that I've
heard. I never heard that before.
Yeah, I mean, most of the folks I see wearing masks around here now are white or from Asia. Every now and then I see a black person wearing a mask, but it's rare. I mean, the thing that's really striking is seeing people outside walking by themselves wearing a mask, and I'm wondering if they've got a pacifier under the mask, but, you know, that's a different question.
Well, of course, not many people know that Mr. Bovard lives in a gated and segregated community.
So. No. It's not gated, okay? It's not gated. It's not that bad. I do live close to a country club that would never have me as a member, which is fine because I would never want to join a country club. But it's funny that they would, I would absolutely not be allowed to join. So.
Well, that's probably true. But I do remember standing out on your back deck, and if somebody could shank the ball the way I used to when I played, they could have put a Titleist right in the middle of your punch bowl if they.
That is true. I mean, and the sad thing is to step out in my deck and see three or four deer, and I'm thinking like, boy, that'd be really easy to take down. But you know, the SWAT, SWAT team helicopters would be over my house 3 minutes later.
Well, you know, a little camo and a little camo cloth and a good skinning knife, you could probably take care of it all before they got there. I'm just saying, but you know, whatever you think. Before we run out of time, for those of you who are compelled to fly the friendly skies, should you hear a chorus of the Battle Hymn of the Republic echoing through the terminal, no worries. Just know that Texas Senator Ted Loquacious Cruz was successful in getting his Get Out of Grope Free amendment attached to the TSA legislation requiring the feeler-uppers at the nation's airports to treat elected officials with the hands-off treatment when boarding their flights of fancy or other garden spots. And Jim has advised us of that, and someone who's got great experience in dealing with the TSA. Piece on Ken Kung Cruz and the riffraff cluttering up the passenger boarding lines at your favorite airport.
That was a fun piece to write. And I just, folks have said, why have I gone so easy on TSA? So, I was trying to placate my critics.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was nice. You put a link to, I can't remember the lady's name. She was one of the housewives of Jersey City or something like that, whose vagina set off the metal detector.
Oh, yeah, that's it. Yeah, that was Bethany Frankel.
Right, Bethany Frankel,
yep,
right.
Yeah, she was a Page Six New York Post entry. But, I mean, this is something which has happened to a lot of women. They've gotten groped on their private parts in a way that's a lot worse than prom night. I mean, okay, I guess some of them enjoy prom night, but that's different. And it's this, there've been a number of court cases involving menstrual pads because the TSA, you know, I guess views them as the same as pipe bombs. And a lot of women have, a number of women have been compelled to submit to a strip search so that the TSA can verify it's a menstrual pad, if not verify that it's bloody.
Well, you know, the thing that gets me about all of that is it can only be additional proof that virtually anyone connected with the government inside the logic-free zone is incapable of seeing anything outside of this very tight, opaque bubble in which they live, because you've got news headlines talking about how illegal entries to the United States, the illegal immigrants, come across the line, they get run through, whatever the run through is. They get a boarding pass to get right on an airplane. Then at the airport, they don't go through security. They just flash their little, whatever it is, subpoena, and you know, they're right on. But, you know, you get on, or if I if I got to a point where I actually had to fly again, you know, and we've got to strip down to our skivvies or whatever based on all of that. And I just can't imagine how it is that otherwise theoretically logical, clear thinking individuals who have the opportunity to make up legislation wouldn't look at that and say, the American citizen is getting screwed again by our own requirements. I don't get it.
Well, but Senator Cruz did look at it, and his solution is to basically completely exempt members of Congress from the abuses. I mean, this is how they view it. And Senator Cruz is very good on some issues. He's smarter than your average Washingtonian, but you know, I'm afraid he's not a credit to Harvard Law.
Yeah, I was really amazed when later on in the story you brought out that one of the reasons for the kerfuffle when he was attempting to get on, and the reason for the backup was the fact that he pulled the "Don't you know who I am?" card, and that just kind of destroyed all the admiration I had for him as being the past president of the debating society and some of the remarkably articulate things that he has done. You can catch on YouTube and all the rest, but that's just the way it is, I guess. And once again, the two and only have gorged ourselves on the smorgasbord of saccharine silliness, always in a bumper crop inside the city that was once a swamp and became a sewer. So as the dreaded curtain of mercy heads our way, this would be a great time to order your personal copy of Jim's latest, Last Rites, The Death of American Liberty. Because remember, Valentine's Day is right around the ventricle. Nothing says love and affliction like reading material from the roving inspector general of these here United States, the Dr. Ruth of politics, Jim Bovard. Amazon is standing by. Order several for all the cuties in your little black or pink book, depending on your LGBTQ score. And pay a visit to Brian Wilson Writes at Substack.com for your free and ribald subscription and other sensual delights begging for your attention. Oh, by the way, members of today's studio audience will receive a complimentary King Joe Bible autographed by the author, President Brandon. For Jim Bovard, Brian Wilson reminding you, time is the sole arbiter between prescience and paranoia. And we'll see where we stand next week.